Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good evening and welcome to The Man's Voice. I hope that everyone had a great Easter weekend last week. We are glad to have you back with us today. I think we have a couple people on the line with me. My panel is slow getting to return, but I want to welcome everybody to the show. Let me try to get out of this music a little bit. So our theme song there, which is very good, but we want to have some conversation with everyone. And remember, if you want to join in with us, you can always call in at 646-668-8740. And welcome. I want to start off by saying welcome. Ron, are you there? Hello, Ron.
Yeah, hi, I'm here.
Bruce, how are you?
I'm fine, sir. And did you have a nice Easter?
I did. You?
I did. I had an excellent one.
I also think Harold is on the line. Is that you, Harold?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, good. We're waiting for a couple of others. But in the meantime, I want to get started by, this election piece is taking up a whole lot of our brain power, time, radio time, TV time. It's jokes. It's serious. It has a lot of people thinking. But one of the things that Trump has said that caused a lot of stir, and everywhere I'm going, people are talking about this piece he said about women and abortion, and women who have abortion should be tried or arrested for that and put in jail because that's breaking the law. Abortion is killing people, so it's breaking the law. I think he's opening up a can of worms. But then, of course, I was talking to a lot of women, and they're question is, okay, so if I have to go to jail for this, what about the doctor that does the abortion? Isn't that the law too? What about the man who I'm married to who's trying to encourage me to get the abortion? Does he go to jail too? I mean, this is just crazy talk for an election time, but what do you guys think about this? What about you, Bruce? What are your thoughts on this subject? First, I don't think it should have been brought up. First, I think Trump was wrong for even going there. But now that he's opened up that can of worms, how are we supposed to think about that?
You sure you want,
you
me,
sure
to
you want me to answer?
Yes, sir.
I'm getting a little bit of echo, but hopefully all your listeners and panelists can hear me. I think using Trump as an example, he does say too many things too fast without thinking. I'll grant you that. And he can be his own worst enemy. But as we do on both sides of the equation, Republicans to Democrats, Democrats to Republicans, we jump on bits and pieces of things that are said. I went back and listened more in depth to the conversation. And he didn't say a smart thing, that's for sure. But if you look at the whole thing, you get the feeling he didn't mean that you have an abortion, you're a criminal, and you should be locked up, and so on and so forth. What he was trying to say, someone needs to be held accountable for what's going on. It's a personal decision. I tend to agree with that. But I think what he was saying is it just doesn't end up scot-free, no consequences, because you're playing with, debatably so, a human life or the conception of a human life. So my whole point in rambling on a little bit was the fact that we're so quick now to jump on, the left jumps on anything the right says, the right jumps on anything, and they cut and paste and twist and chop to make it fit whatever they want it to fit. And I sure wish some of that on both sides would just stop and let people hear. If you want to make a point, let them hear the whole thing and let them decide. We as voters out here and people that are supposed to be the ones in charge are a lot smarter than the politicians led us to give us credit for. And I think if we hear the whole story, we can form our own decisions.
All right. What about you, Ron? What do you think about that?
I think the problem, and I'm going to be blunt here, I think the problem is not necessarily Trump. I think we just have a bunch of idiots that are running for president, and, you know, you can disagree with me, and that's fine. That's what makes this country great. But going back to what Trump said, and with all due respect, Bruce, and you made the comment that, you know, sometimes he doesn't think before he says things, and I agree with that. But in Trump's case, I think he can think all he wants, but he's still not going to say anything smart. I mean, don't get me wrong. He's really smart for in a lot of ways when it comes to business deals and things like that. But in terms of the knowledge of foreign policy and all the other things that are required to be president, or not required, but that would be very nice to have those qualities in whoever is president of the U.S., he's lacking. And nobody can say that he knows more about foreign policy than anybody else that's running for president right now. And it sounds like I'm jumping on Trump, and I guess I kind of am. But, you know, I honestly don't like anybody that's running for president right now. So when I vote in November, it's going to be for the lesser of all, you know, all the evils that are out there. So, and it's a shame that, in my opinion, that it has to be that way.
Ron, can I add one more comment? I don't disagree with you at all. I think what you want and what I want are probably the same thing, in the fact that I would love, no matter what the label the politician has around his neck, I'd like he or she to be able to think things out, bring in the talent that they need around them, because they can't make the decisions on their own, nor do we expect them to,
right,
and really investigate, research, whatever word you want to use, before you make a comment and before you decide.
Yeah, and I couldn't agree more. What bothers me about Trump is that he'll change his mind on a subject 10 times. And maybe that's just the media harping on that one thing about Trump changing his mind all the time. And, you know, sometimes we let the media kind of dictate what we are going to believe about a particular person, which is unfortunate in its own ways. But, you know, that's you've seen him change his mind about several things many times.
Right.
That's true. That's true.
I heard you guys say, and, you know, as you mentioned, David, this has trumped all of our talkings, our conversations, the news media and radio. I was talking to a guy the other day. He said he's not scared of Trump. He's scared of the people that are listening and believing in Trump. So, and that's more scary than anything. You have these groups and groups of people who are daily jumping on the Trump bandwagon for one reason or another. And the things that he say and the things that he says repeatedly pushes off a lot of ethnic backgrounds, a lot of minorities, women, everybody. So to have a group of people that's buying into this nonsense is really scary as a whole. Not Trump himself, because one person can't do that much damage. But it's the people who are supporting him and believing in his rhetoric is going to cause the major problems.
I agree with that. What about, we haven't heard from Frank. Are you there? Hello? I think he's getting adjusted. Anyway, I think what Trump has done for America was remind us what's in America. I think the middle class forgot about the class below us. And I think we all have. And I think Trump has brought light on that group of people that we kind of thought, a lot of us thought went away. A lot of us forgot that we're even there. And I think that what Trump did was shine the light, saying, and let those people have a voice again. I might be wrong on that, but let's see if we can get some comments. What do you think, Bruce?
Well, I kind of like I think what Harold said earlier. I'd like to lay a template down on that comment and what you said, David, is what I kind of bristle at or get kind of concerned about is any of us that blindly or with very little thought follow a particular group, whether it's a Trump group, a racial group, a feminist group, or whatever, and really don't think hard and fast, and only the individual knows. I have no way of knowing, nor is it any of my business. But I really get concerned that we're doing less and less thinking about the voting privilege that we're using and just blindly following or very casually following groups that we kind of are attracted to. And if I'm anywhere close to being right, that's not a good thing.
Yeah, I agree with that. And, you know, some degree, we all kind of do that.
Yes, we do.
And you know, I guess part of the reason is, you know, we don't have time and really sit there and read for hours and hours about what each particular candidate stands for. I mean, I wish I did, because then I'd be a much more informed citizen and voter, but I simply don't. So I, you know, unfortunately rely on what Fox and CNN and the news media tell me.
And the news media can be swayed and jaded just as well as anybody else.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
I agree.
Yeah, they sure can.
More than anyone else, actually.
How many times have we said, just give me the facts and let me decide? I don't want your opinion. I don't want you to slant it. Just tell me what's out there and I'll make the decision.
You know what I would really like? I would really like to be able, and if anybody has seen this, please let me know where I could find it. I would like a simple, you know, one or two page document that lists all of the major issues that, you know, that we're talking about in this presidential race, and then list the candidates in a one liner on where each one of those stands in the issue. And I know that may be a easier said than done, but I think it can be done, you know, in one or two sentences. Tell me where each one of the candidates stands on abortion, on foreign policy, on, you know, Muslims coming into this country, on all the issues.
All right.
That would be an intelligent cheat sheet, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Has anybody seen anything like that?
No, I don't think it exists. I don't think anybody
does.
Why don't we try to create one?
I don't think we could. Change.
Well, we'd get right in the middle of everything, wouldn't we?
Oh, yeah, we would.
Except we'd have to update it on a daily basis.
Hourly basis.
Yeah, that's true.
And by area of community, because they say different things as they move across the United States. It depends on the community they're in. Somebody has some background noise going on. But how many people, I don't know if you know, but April 24th through the 30th is called National Reentry Week. Does anybody know what that is?
No.
What's it called?
National Reentry Week. It's celebrated across the United States. It's April 24th through 30th.
I didn't know we were gone. Are we?
All right, Bruce. Let me. Okay, that is letting criminals or people who have served time in federal and state prisons back into society. The numbers are staggering. Did you know that in a year's time, there are 600,000 individuals who return to our neighborhoods after serving time in federal and state prisons? But in a year, there are 11.4 million individuals who cycle through our local jails based on tickets and all those kind of things. So we put more people away. We have more people in crime than any other country there is. But the federal government is doing April 24th through 30th as National Reentry Week to try to get states to allow, because they're saying that the amount of people that have these records, because anybody now pulls records for jobs and everything are causing people to have mediocre jobs or not being able to get promoted or not to be able to get education. They can't get federal grants. So the federal government has finally come out to say, we need to help these people somehow. And so because the long-term impact of criminal, you know, records prevent motivated people who basically got, you know, bought up for something minor or maybe wasn't even, you know, that if you do something wrong and then they in court say you were not guilty, it's still on your record that you were arrested for it. What do you think about that? I'm in favor of it myself, but Harold, what do you think about this piece? I think it's a big piece. That's 11.4 million people. Actually, what that is, federal government is a cash cow. That is money. 11.4 million people times $100 to $1,000 is a whole lot of money.
And as we mentioned before, David, you know, I have no problem with reentry and giving people a second chance, but it's all about the dollars. If they're not making money, it's not making sense to them. And that's a huge price to pay for somebody trying to reenter into society, trying to get back in. Somebody's gonna be making money off of it.
That's true. Go ahead.
I'm not sure I understood your question completely.
Well, the question is, what is your stance on letting people who have committed minor crimes or crimes, say, got caught with a bag of weed or they got caught with, you know, these kind of people, what do you think about expunging their crimes?
Oh, okay. I missed that part, David. If it's a minor crime and they're nonviolent, and I would say go ahead and do it because, you know, the justice system, the way it is, they're building more prisons than there are schools. And if that can help us eliminate corruption of the system of them going back to prison, them paying their debt to society, and then they truly turn and reform, I have no problem with them paying to have their record expunged, reintroducing them into society. But if they do happen to err again, then it comes back up.
Okay.
The other thing, David, I thought I heard you mention also that the situation, if they accuse someone of a crime, whether it be minor or major, and they're found not guilty, and let me assume for the moment that we have faith in the judicial system that is a just and properly executed decision, as much as you want to know about it, what do you guys think about why shouldn't their record be clean if they were found not guilty? Why should that history hang on them when you've just said, well, he or she didn't do it?
I think it should be erased from the record, personally.
Yeah, I do too.
What I'd like to know is that, you know, the comment that David made, which I've heard before, that, you know, we, the U.S., put more people in jail than any other country. Is that pure numbers or is that per capita? Because if it's, you know, if it's per capita, then I'd like to dig deeper and find out, well, why? Why is it that there's so many people going to jail in this country versus other countries? I mean, are we doing a better system at putting, you know, the criminals and the bad people away, or are we just being a little too quick to jump to put somebody in prison?
I would say B,
because, you know, most of the jails across the country becoming more privatized, and they're looking for more ways to get that money. I think I read that somewhere that one state moved from their prison system to a privatized system, and it's costing them more money because they're not running it now than it would if they had kept it. So it's all about the money. If we're sending people to the jail, I'm not sure how much it is per day to have one inmate in jail, but you can use that money to send somebody to college.
Right. Yeah, I've heard that before, that, you know, it costs X number of dollars to educate a child or whatever, and it's a lot less than it costs to maintain somebody in jail. So, you know, I just don't get it.
Mr. Wiggins, are you on the air? I think he's there.
Yes,
right?
I am.
Hey, okay. Frank is on the air, too.
Okay. Yes, I am.
Mr. Wiggins, can you tell us what you think about this?
I agree with what's been said. Let me be specific. I think if a person commits a crime, serve the time, they should be able to come in reentry. And it is cheaper to send a person to college than to incarcerate them. I'm talking about minor offenses. And the thing is, when you incarcerate that person, you're talking about $30,000 to $40,000 per year. When we could be educating that person when they are incarcerated, all they do is sit in a cell and associate with people that are hardened criminals, and they become worse than they were when they come in, or
right,
they're making about change. So I'm all for rehabilitation opposed to incarceration. We incarcerate more people than any other country in the world. It's a big business. In fact, I had some people approach me asking me to invest in a company that deals with incarceration and running prisons. And that's in Florida, here in Florida. The prediction was, if you couldn't read, then you were predicted to be a criminal by the age of 18. And that's when they start building all the prisons. So we got a major problem.
It has become one of the reasons I think the United States have more people in jail is because we're paying people, we're paying lawyers. You know, I read a story, I think last week, where this judge was getting paid. He got paid over $1 million for sending juveniles to prison because in his jurisdiction, they opened up a privatized juvenile detention facility. And the juvenile detention facility was paying him to send kids to jail. So for minor little things, he would give them years, and then he would get a kickback on it. And one of the kids hung themselves. He was like a kid who got caught doing something minor. Maybe, you know, I don't know what it was, but I do know that it was minor, and the judge gave him like years, and so he hung himself. And the mother went, and now the judge finally got busted because they found out he was getting kickbacks. And he had earned over $1 million for this. So I think it is a big money business until we figure out how to cut the purse, cut the strings, which I think, I don't know if we'll ever will, then we will always be the biggest country putting people in jail because people are making so much money off of it.
And David, I think I read that story too. You're right. It starts with our politicians, judges, and lawyers. If they're getting kickbacks, it's just like the PACs, the lobbyists, they're lining, you know, somebody's lining somebody's pocket. And in the case, until we get rid of those people, then the change is not going to happen. The big companies lobby governors and senators to push their agenda, pro or con. And so once these politicians get a taste of that good money, they're going to do everything in their power to keep it rolling.
Right. What do you think, Frank?
Well, I it's a shame. It's a big shame. And, yes, we are. We incarcerate more people than any country, period, other than maybe Korea, North Korea, or China. We don't know the numbers there. But I think the whole judicial system has to be changed because, you know, we have people running for office based on the fact that law and order. And that was a big thing in one of the parties a few years back. So we incarcerated people. You know, when the Clintons came along, they said, hey, we can play that game also. We can up we can up the toughness and we can put people in jail for drugs, whereas we have people now, you know, in certain states are using drugs almost freely. So we shouldn't be incarcerating people over drug usage. That's we found that out. That's like incarcerating people over alcohol usage. And we should have hospitals and centers that will treat people, whatever that addiction might be, whether it be a sexual addiction, whether it be a drug addiction, alcohol addiction. And we should have centers. I think that's a better investment than what we've got, because we're not gaining, as you all have stated, we're not getting anything back from putting people in jail for minor crimes.
Right.
We're actually creating worse people when they get out.
Yeah, we've got people that can't vote when they came out. We've got people that can't get a job. We have people that are going to continue or even go higher on crime because they can't get employed. And their records, you know, are denoted with these remarks. And then there are certain employers, of course, like the Men's Warehouse guy. He never ran a background check on people that were being hired, specifically because he did not want to preclude people who had been incarcerated from having a job. And that was one of the things he was noted for, of not ever doing that. Whereas, you know, a lot of people, when you get hired, they want to know, you know, your history and your record. And of course, if your record comes up with a incarceration, or you don't even have to come up with incarceration. As you guys stated earlier, I know this because my former business was as a security manager. And what happens is that any time you're accused of anything or suspicion, it's put in a record. And when you do a background investigation or security investigation, that's going to come up. It's going to come up, you know, suspicion of this, suspicion of that. Well, you can imagine, you can grow up in a small town like I did, whereby the guy can just record your name down just because he doesn't like you and he knows you. And when you, later in life, you'll end up having this gigantic record and never have been in jail and never been in front of a judge. So our system needs to be changed.
Definitely.
David?
Yes.
One of the things that I've heard a lot of people say, and I tend to agree with, is one of the best ways and most fulfilling ways to rehabilitate someone is to give them a job. Let them work. Give them an opportunity or a way out of whatever out is they're trying to get away from. And I think people expect when, and I can't tell you what the level is, but let's say the level is a heinous crime or, you know, a serious crime. People in this country, you know, justice and so forth, expect that person that's found guilty to be punished to some degree. Having said that, why can't then, after some time of punishment, and it can be, doesn't have to be long, there can be a choice by them or by someone, by them, I'd like to think, where they have a way out, where they can say, look, okay, now you still have X years to serve in your sentence or the penalty is not complete, but now you're eligible, you can go out and serve in this job, this job, this job, and this job. We've got people out there that are willing to hire you. Here's an opportunity. You may not think it's the best job in the world, but it's a job, and it's a way for you to get out from under, build some self-worth, feel good about yourself, earn some money, and get out from under, as one of us said, from sitting in a cell and being educated by all the bad elements, you start becoming mentored by some of the good elements. And for the life of me, I don't know why we're not doing that anymore. They used to do a lot of that in Florida, some good, some bad. We used to do it in other states, and all you hear is, well, you can't make them do this kind of job or that kind of. It's not about making. Give them the choice. Let them help lift themselves up out of the problem that they're in. Show some initiative to, you know, start yourself on a better track.
You just nailed it. You just nailed it right on the head when you talked about males, especially black males, not having a job. That has contributed to a lot of crime in America. How do you take an uneducated young person of color that doesn't have a job, that has children, we're going to hypothetically say two or three, and expect it to be a man and take care of his family, and he doesn't have a job, no income. He's going to do something stupid. He's going to commit a crime, a stupid crime at that, to get some money.
Right.
And then he's put into incarceration with hardened criminals that will teach him how to do it better. Oh,
yeah,
you
they'll
didn't
teach
do
him
it
all
right.
Right.
You should have did it like this. If you did it like this, then you wouldn't have gotten caught. That's the type of conversation that goes on after you commit a stupid crime like that. And then he's got one strike. And then he goes back out into society, can't find a job because he's been incarcerated, and he puts down or he doesn't put it down on his application, and they don't hire him. He repeats it again. He goes back into incarceration, completes the recycle all over again, and then three strikes, you're out. It's a vicious cycle. We got to create some jobs. You know, they used to have the CC camps when my dad was younger, where men could work in the bridges and fix the environment and work in fields. We got to create some jobs.
And God knows we've got the need. And these people, if it's done in the right way and are connected up with people that would love to have them come work for them, I mean, that is an ultimate solution, and it's just staring us in the face.
Yes.
Well, it's the problem, though, there's a couple problems in the argument. First of all, people in the United States are not ready to invest in other people, in other human beings. You know, there's a segment of our population pretty significantly sized that they don't want to take money out of their pocket to help a welfare child, a child that's been produced as a product of the welfare environment, let's say. They would rather just say, don't have the child at all. Okay, I've heard that and read that, and it's a little bit tougher language than I just used. So, and the other problem that I have with that is that, and I agree with the overall concept that you're talking about, but the other problem I have is that for a man to be productive and show stick-to-itiveness, he has to have pride in what he's doing. And he has to feel like he's respected. And so, and that right there, that issue of respect, which is connected to this love thing that we talked about in the past, is that some guys will just say, hey, I'm going to sit in jail because I don't think the system is fair. I think I'm being taken advantage of. So, you know, I really think that what we've got to do is we've got to treat people fairly. We've got to do the right thing. And if we do the right thing on an individual basis, we're going to be able to change people's lives and their habits and their proclivity to get in trouble because they're going to want to they're going to feel like they're loved. They're going to feel like they want to be responsible citizens. But, again, one of the sticklers is that people would rather throw people in jail and execute them by some type of method, hanging or whatever, and we get nothing back from that as a result of that, and it doesn't prevent people from more crime. You know, none of these punishments that we're talking about prevent people from redoing the same process over again. And what we're stuck with is this big, gigantic tab of where we've got to lay out these dollars, that we can lay out the same dollars in a lesser amount and achieve better results if we just took the guy and put our arms around the guy and said, hey, look, what do you think you're good at doing? Or let me show you what I think that you could be capable of achieving and set this person up to be a successful, productive American. And that's what we don't do.
I guess,
But you've got, you do have some people, though, if you're accused, tried, and proven to be guilty of, let's say, a serious crime, whoever you are, people expect some sort of punishment. Doesn't mean it can't be different than it is now. Doesn't mean it is or isn't incarceration. They expect that. They expect that person to pay a price. But that price doesn't have to be for the rest of their life necessarily in the way of incarceration. It might be a certain part of it is incarceration or is some kind of punishment, and then the rehabilitation starts. And why would it cost more money? I would think it would cost less if we gave that person the opportunity to be somewhat take the initiative to get out of there and start in a, maybe it's a very remedial job to start with, but one of the best ways you can ever test someone's gain someone's respect is to go work for them and show them what you're really made of. You know, if you link up the right people with an employer that's hungry for help, even in some of the nonprofits I've worked on, we have people come in that are under under penalty, are under incarceration, and they love the fact of being able just to get out and do something other than sit in a jail cell or sit in a in an incarcerated situation.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Go ahead, Ron. Go ahead.
I was going to say, Bruce, when you said nonprofit organizations, and I can't think of the name of this nonprofit right now, but there is a huge nationwide nonprofit organization that hires people with disabilities, not just physical but mental as well.
I can't
think of the name of the organization right now, but I actually toured the facility here in their Miami location, and I was amazed to see the people there with all kinds of disabilities making uniforms for the military, making flags. I mean, they were doing inserts for the local paper. And why can't we do that with people that have been incarcerated? Why can't a nonprofit like that be created that gives people that have been in jail a second chance in a job like that, you know, where they can at least start earning some money and get back on track?
Well, and as someone said earlier, maybe even more important than the money they earn is the respect they're given.
And that's true, but I don't think society wants to. I think society wants to keep that air of felony, conviction, you're worthless above their heads, so they can't think they can do anything. Many of these
forever?
Companies won't hire
forever.
Yeah.
I don't believe that for a minute.
We are a throwaway society because if you look at it, a felony, even though it's not a heinous murder crime or something like that, as somebody mentioned earlier, you can't vote. But if it's not a tremendous crime, okay, selling drugs, we understand that's bad, but it's not killing anybody, it's not defrauding people out their retirement, and why can't they come out and be a productive society and vote? How come they can't go and just get a job? Because the laws are set to keep them down. Once you have that felony stigma, you can't do anything.
Well, you're right about that. You get that tag around your neck.
And you know what it does. Once you get that tag on you as a felony, it has a psychological effect as well.
Correct. It goes back to doing things worse, the same thing you're doing, or worse, because you don't have a source of income. So, okay, I'm going to go knock somebody upside their head. I'm going to take their money. I'm going to do credit card fraud. I'm going to sell more drugs. I'm going to be doing everything I can to get money to provide for my family. When the government can say, okay, we know you were a felon. We know you did X, Y, or Z. Pay your fines, have it expunged, or have it released from your record so you can get a meaningful job.
You know, I was thinking about something as well. These people that we're talking about, this population we're talking about, is a very entrepreneurial person. I mean, they know how to sell drugs. They know how to sell this and that and do illegal activity. The problem is they got the wrong product.
Yes.
Now, let's take that same skill set. Let's take the same skill set. What product can we come up with that's legal, that's needed, that's productive, that's that they can sell using their entrepreneurial skills and be productive?
Okay, gentlemen, I have a caller coming in from Oakland, California, who says he would like to get in on this conversation because he has some ideas. Caller, why don't you give us what you think?
Hello, how you doing? On Blog Talk, they call me Mr. Research. I happen to research a bunch of stuff. So here's a bunch of solutions to what you gentlemen are
talking about. What's your name, young man?
My name is Q. I try to protect my soul. Q is really good.
Yeah,
that's fine. And like I said, on Blog Talk, they call me Mr. Research. But here's the elephant in the room, though, gentlemen, that we're really not addressing. The solution is in men hiring men pulling up young males. The problem is always this, and let me prove this by some billboards that you may have seen. When you look up Big Brothers are begging men, especially men of color, please come volunteer for these boys. But men of color don't. They talk about they want a solution, but they don't even volunteer one time out of a year. Yet they're at the forefront of complaining about things that are happening. Let me offer another suggestion. When you look at something like maybe 100 black men of whatever city, Baltimore, Atlanta, doesn't matter, they tend to, according to their own website, help little girls more than they help boys. Here is the problem, wrapped in the solution. Males, unfortunately, are not focused on the next generation of males the way successful women are focused on the next generation of little girls. Males, instead, respectfully, complain but hate to create change. So when we have these solutions that we say that we want, it's as easy as looking at any male, especially male of color, business, and you see the people who are not male of color or male in that business, and you wonder, hey, you have a business. Why would you not get an intern? Why would you not get a person who's trying to be what you are? Why would you not employ them? Instead, men, especially men of color in particular, which I am, they're often saved by white women who hire men of color or males more than even females of color. So I say all that to say this. Our solution is basically in those people who have businesses, who are successful, and when we look at who they are hiring, we see why the problems exist and why some of these people are out on the streets doing wrong.
Okay, Mr. Wiggins, can you talk to this man?
Yes, and you know, thank you very much for calling in and tell a friend. But I wanted to say something as well. You're absolutely right. We as men need to hire men, and we need to mentor men. For example, after church today, I've been doing it for the past month now. I've been going to a treatment facility and talking to people that are suffering from the addiction of alcohol and drug abuse. And the men, their biggest issue is, I don't have a job, lack of respect in my family, I can't take care of my kids. It's all exterior. The measure of that man's drug usage is my lack of money and being able to live up to my responsibility. That's the major issue. Why do you use drugs? Why are you here? Why are you unproductive? Well, I can't get any employment. That's the major issue that I just faced today.
Wow. All right.
Well, and,
go ahead.
And if to add to what you said, that was Don, right? Was that you, Don?
Yes, that was me, Don. Uh-huh.
I've heard the little bit of Big Brother work I've done years ago, and that's no excuse. I should do more. Is I'm either gonna get respect. This is the young man talking to me. Or I'm going to earn respect. And you know what I mean by getting respect. That's not a good thing. And if they feel they don't have a choice, they're going to get respect in a way that maybe isn't a good path. And
yes,
if somehow we can turn it around and find those male-owned companies or male-managed companies and kind of shift the emphasis towards those because we feel it's important, so they get an opportunity, then they can begin to, in some small ways here and there, it's at least an improvement, step in the right direction, they can earn respect. And that's huge. You just said it. That's the hole in their boat that's sinking them every time because they don't get an opportunity to earn respect.
That's it right there. That's what I heard today. I can't – one guy stood up and said, what is your biggest issue? My family doesn't respect me. My family doesn't respect me. So they don't respect me, so I use drugs and I commit crimes. Now, why don't they respect you? Because you're not contributing to the well-being of your family, rent, food, etc., transportation, clothing, necessities of life. He's not contributing. So therefore, he feels less than. It's a case where we have to create jobs for men, leaders, men. And that's what we got to do. It's a point blank problem, and we got to deal with it. It's point blank.
Let me just say this right here. We, you know, our country, we have plenty of opportunity to create jobs, and we have not only the opportunity to create the jobs, we have the work that needs to be done on our infrastructure, such as bridges that like to fall down because they're old and haven't been replaced, okay? And so we've known this. I mean, we've discussed this pretty much in the last 20 years, and we've watched these bridges and places like this just tumble. And so there isn't a will right now. And if you couple that with the need for this pride and this feeling of worth, I'm going to tell you that I identify with those people who have been incarcerated and don't feel very good about themselves, and don't feel like they should be, they feel like they should be knocking somebody in the head, okay, and just taking the money because life isn't fair, and I'm going to die anyway or starve anyway, and so why should I work for Burger King wages, okay, and not have enough money to, you know, support my family, okay? I mean, if you really look at it, the math on it just doesn't make any sense. Except for if you're going to ask, if you're asking that person to kiss your boots, you know, in other words, stoop low, hang in there, then that the math on it might work in the old days. So that's how I see it. Okay, if you want to, pride is having a job that you feel self worth, and having a fair and just wage, and we've got the work to do in our country, and it's cheaper doing that work than putting. You know, we have 3 million or more people that are in jail. Okay, there's no place like that on earth other than the United States.
You hit it right on the head. Our infrastructure. If we were to create jobs repairing our infrastructure, just that alone.
Well, here's along those lines. Here's a terrific incentive. What if I was a contractor trying to get the edge on my competition, and I want to build this bridge, since we're talking about bridges, and I propose, or the state has got out ahead of me and come up with this brilliant idea of if you infuse into your work crew X percent or so many properly released incarcerated people into your work crew, we'll pay their salary because, heck, they're paying to have them in prison anyway. So now all of a sudden that contractor's got a significant advantage. He's got a workforce. He's willing to take a small or a large or anywhere in between opportunity. And the more times he does it, the more confidence that contractor has, because I've seen it. I've got examples I could share. Now all of a sudden that contractor has maybe an edge on his competition, and he's got people on his crew that want to prove something. They want to prove they're worth something.
I think you would get contracts.
But, you know, I think you would, but then also, as we talked about, prisons are big businesses. They'll use those incarcerated inmates to do like they've been doing for years, farming, producing vegetables and stuff from farms, license plates, building cabinets at 5 cents an hour, as opposed to giving them $4 or $5 an hour or $10 an hour. So they'll go ahead and use those same individuals and still cut them in terms of hourly wage, so they won't have any self-worth. So eventually it's going to get to the point where they're going to, big business is going to come over and try to take over that as well.
Well, maybe we got a lead period, though, where they haven't done that yet, and heaven forbid we give these people a decent wage, and it still would probably be far below the price per hour we do to support someone sitting in a jail cell.
Whatever happened to companies like Manpower?
They're there.
Yeah, the problem is the federal government is just not, you know, behind. The federal government and the people of the United States are just not behind this spending money to do what's necessary to protect our country. And when I say protect our country, having good roads is defense of our country, okay? Because when disasters happen, if you don't have good roads and good bridges, you know, then you're in trouble. And protecting our country, you know, the problem with this this thing that just happened over in Belgium is that you've got a population of people who live right across the street, you know, from another population of people. They don't interact, and there's 40% unemployment by this minority population. 40% of the people are unemployed. Now, I mean, in the United States, in Belgium, how do you expect people to be loyal to the country when they don't feel like they're a part of the country? I mean, come on. It's not going to happen, all right? That's, you know, we've got robberies that are going wild every evening because people are not engaged in responsible work activities, and the wages that would attract these people and possibly motivate them are not being offered. And so it's easier to be subversive. It's easier to go out and knock somebody over the head and say, hey, you know, if I get caught, at least I won't, you know, I can tell my parents that I won't be able to support my kids because I'm in jail, versus I'm not in jail and I can't even find a job. All right. I can't even find a job before I ever get incarcerated because they're not hiring people like me.
So you know, and you know something, Frank, just you said something earlier that I think we need to just concentrate on, and that's rebuilding the infrastructure. I grew up in Michigan, and I live in South Florida. Michigan is a state that builds automobiles, and we got the raggediest roads I've ever seen in my life in the state of Michigan. Potholes like you wouldn't believe, where cars can fall through them. And here in Florida, they don't build vehicles, but they got nice roads. Now, anybody that knows the Midwest, they know that the roads need to be repaired. Now, those could be jobs for men. Why aren't
Absolutely.
The leaders of the states or the politicians in the state employing people to repair the roads. Let's just talk about the roads.
Yeah. We had the same problem in Virginia. We had the same problem in Virginia. Not enough road money to do the road work for the roads that are necessary. Okay?
Yeah.
Because it hasn't been a priority. So if you provide enough money for the road work, then you're going to expand the employment base of people, and you're going to provide for your civil defense.
And you're going to put the biggest boost in the job market you've ever seen in the last 30 years.
Right.
And you're going to put self-pride in a young man where he can take care of his family.
Exactly.
And you build a type of a character and allegiance that you want a person to have to your country and to your ideals, okay? But without that, nobody respects those ideals because they don't pertain to that individual. All right? So we've got a whole bunch of people that are disaffected population of people that we haven't engaged. It's like being a basketball coach and never sharing the basketball with the people that are sitting in the stands. All right? I mean, you've got to throw that ball over to them and say, hey, let's play, and you're in the game. Well, I don't know how to shoot a jumper. Well, come on, we're going to teach you how to do it, and we're going to carry you along, and you're going to be part of the team.
I can't tell you how many times the last half of my career thus far has been as a pipeline contractor and underground utilities. So you think the roads are bad. You guys haven't got a clue on how bad the water and sewer systems are. If you think the roads are bad.
We have an idea. Yeah, we have an idea how bad the water is. And I know that from New York also. Yeah.
That's true.
Hey, Flint, Michigan is just the tip of the iceberg, gentlemen. Flint, Michigan is just the tip of the iceberg.
Flint is only one in probably thousands.
Well, everywhere, what we've done
is important. It's just not the only one. That's for sure.
No, it's not.
We're just not bringing any new investment in there, so nobody's spending the money. And the people who have the money don't want to spend the money. They're going to take it somewhere in this world, but they're not taking it, they're not investing it in our citizens, okay? So I'm upset about that, okay, because build jobs, create jobs, and I don't think that either one of the people that are going to possibly be elected as the president, next president of the United States, have that foremost in their minds and know how to do that. I think the discussion that we just had, all of us had, I think that discussion would be a better discussion on creating jobs, and the need is there. It's just a matter of getting people motivated to stand behind that and make it happen, and we don't have that right now.
Yeah, and there's no downside. It creates jobs. It fixes problems. It improves our infrastructure, all of which needs to be done. And where's the downside?
Yeah, I'm not frightened of a well-paid working male hurting me or coming in and trying to rob a 7-Eleven. I'm not worried about that person. It's the person that is not engaged in a productive activity that's going to provide for his well-being. That's who I'm concerned about in any case, anywhere that I am. Okay, and so we have to actively engage people.
All right. I think we're only down to like 2 minutes before we have to end the show. And we've been good discussion. I want to tell the panel here that, you know, these are the conversations that we need to get out to our communities. And this program is for. But I always end up with asking a question and try to get an answer. So end up with a little bit lighter. Let me ask you this question. I know that you've always heard this, and I've always heard this, but I think it's an old folks tale, but I want you to add to it in today. So here's my question. Let's start off with Mr. Wiggins. I know that we've heard all our lives that the way to a man's heart is through his stomach. Mr. Wiggins, a young lady came to you today and said, what's the best way to a man's heart? What would you tell her?
I agree. I agree.
Oh, wow. Okay, what about you? Go ahead, Mr. Wiggins. Go ahead.
Well, food, that's something that's been said many years, and I agree. I agree. I right off the rip, for instant answer. I agree.
All right. What about you, Harold? What would you say? And I know that you have kids in your house. So if your daughter came and asked you, and well, I don't know if that happened, but if your daughter came and asked you and said, "Dad, what do you think the best way?" Or I don't know who would ask you, but what's the best way to a man's heart? What would you say?
Her affection, being upfront, honest, and true. Now, stomach is a good way, you know. But to be real, if she's not sincere about him, then he'll pick that up, and then it wouldn't go anywhere.
Right. All right. What about you, Bruce?
Well, if you're interested in her and she's interested in you, the thing that's going to make the biggest impact, I think, is her best way to show her affection. In a lot of cases, it is food through the stomach. And food, then, I think, represents a lot more than just putting substance in your mouth, because she's trying to show you what one of her talents is and does it well. Another one, it might be just having being able to talk really well or loving someone really well. So I think it changes, but whatever that young lady's talent is that best shows, enlightens me about her, that's the one I want to see.
All right. What about you, Frank?
Well, I think it's, for me, it's their consideration for others.
Okay.
You know,
well,
yeah, how they treat other people.
Good. All right. So it's about that time. It's actually right, maybe a minute over. But we want to thank everybody for listening in. Those callers that called, there were several people on listening again. We got to get you guys asking questions and coming in and join us. I know you heard the gentleman from Oakland. There were a couple others that wanted to talk also. But thank you guys for talking to me, and I want to thank Ron, who is in Miami, and Frank, who's in Virginia, Bruce, who's in Michigan, Don in Florida, and Harold in Alabama. And we all like to thank you for listening in, and we will talk to you again next week. Gentlemen, have a nice week.
Have a good week, gentlemen.
Have a good week, guys.
All right. You too.
See you guys later.